We're moving towards two discoveries. One is the presence of a phase of acceleration of our past, called inflation, and the presence of a phase of acceleration of our present, called dark energy. If true, there are these discoveries have huge theoretical implications, in which the problem of the cosmological constant of the landscape of string theory, like inflation, might all become bounded together. In order for this, it is very necessary to probe inflation. And I will show how an effective filtered description allows us to explore all the possible signatures of inflation. And in particular, I will concentrate on the signature of the non-Gaussianities. And I will show the analysis of the WMAP 5-year. This will lead us to introduce the alternative to inflation. And from that, it's very easy to see that we can have also alternatives for the current acceleration of the universe, which, however, looks like very similar to the cosmological constant. And therefore, I will spend some time explaining in detail what is eternal inflation, which might be connected to the solution of the cosmological constant. So, of course, when we talk about the cosmology, we should always remind that this is really a data-driven subject. This is a picture of Kobe, the CMB in Kobe 92. This is WMAP 10 years after. And now we're launching very soon new satellites, which should improve the resolution by another factor of 10, 20. This is a really incredible improvement. And the same has been occurring in galaxies, supernovas. The field of cosmology has been improving a lot in the data which have been arriving. With all this data, are we learning something new? And I think, yes, we have one and a half, I think, very important discovery. These discoveries come from the fact that we can explain all the beautiful experiments at CMB. But here are the data points, with a simple model of the universe with just six parameters. These six parameters, three of them I consider most important. They are 5%, they determine the energy content of the universe. They are 5% baryons, 25% dark matter, and 70% dark energy. And and this dark energy is the one which is thinking responsible, we think is responsible to the acceleration of the universe. The fact that these simple models of the universe can fit very well all what we observe means that we can trust what we're seeing from the observation and do the next step, that is infer what these observations are teaching us about the fundamental physics. This is really important. And they're really teaching us that there is now a phase of acceleration in the universe that we assume to be due to dark energy, something like a cosmological constant. And that there is collecting evidence that there was a phase of acceleration also in our past due to the inflation. These discoveries are not only important because they say that they tell us that there is something beyond the standard model. Not only the cosmological constant, but inflation, if it existed, it involves energy of order maybe 10 to the 15 dV, something incredible, something we'll never be able to probe directly. But I think it's teaching us it can be even something more at a deeper level, because it might connect, it might lead to explanation of the cosmological constant. This is because there is a very speculative proposed solution by Weinberg, where he noticed that in a universe with radiation, matter, and cosmological constant, the period where matter dominates, it's only restricted to a certain amount of time, because in the past, radiation dominates, and in the future, the cosmological constant is forced to dominate. Now, you notice that in a universe with like this, the structure can form only when matter dominates. And therefore, it's clear that if in order to have structure and therefore to have any sort of form of observer, you need to have an upper bound to the cosmological constant. If the cosmological constant is too high, you don't form structures. Then he noticed that if you have a theory with many vacua, all the same, but differing just by the value of the cosmological constant, then it's pretty clear that the value of the cosmological constant we will find, any observer we found, will be below this upper bound. Now, this theory is very speculative, and in detail, it's really, there are many unclear points. But it's clear that it needed a few things. It needed that we found the large cosmological constant, and we found it. It needed a theory with many vacua, and the landscape of string theory is giving that. This was way up, all everything after he made this theory. And also needed a way to populate this vacuum in a way which is independent of initial conditions. And we seem to have inflation in our past. And often inflation is preceded by a phase of eternal inflation, which has all the ingredients to populate the vacuum in a way which is independent of initial conditions. Now, as I said, and I repeat, this theory is very speculative, but and many things are unclear. But it got as close as nobody before to the solution of the cosmological constant. And this means that I think all the unclear point of this picture should be clarified. And there is a lot of work to be done in this direction. And I'm not the only one thinking about this. Many people, even here, have been working on this kind of subjects. And it's just a possible direction, and we're trying to see if it is right. But this direction is based on the fact that there is inflation in our past. And I would like to point out how do we probe inflation, because now it's even more important to probe inflation, because this is connected not only to a phase of the early universe, but to the solution of the cosmological constant, mainly. So what are the standard predictions of inflation? Well, if you take inflation, usually it's thought as a scalar field rolling down a flat potential. And if the potential is flat enough, which means this epsilon is small enough, then the universe expands exponentially with this kind of small velocity, while the field rolls down with a small velocity. Now, when the fields roll down, it produces quantum fluctuations, which then get translated in density perturbation, delta rho over rho, or the perturbation in CMB, delta t over t. These are called zeta. And what inflation really predicts is that the perturbations, there is a two-point function, a variance of this fluctuation, which are called zeta square, and they are parametric in this form. And what at quantitative level, what we have been problem of inflation so far is just this number here, which set the height of this graph, and also how this graph slightly depends on scales, which is another number. So at quantitative level of inflation so far, we've been probing just two numbers. And maybe we know that there are maybe gravitational waves there, if we see them with a very nice and qualitative signature, but at quantitative level, this will tell another number. So these are just three numbers. And in principle now, the experimental point, the observational side has grown so much with WMAP, Planck, Sloan, that we could look for more. We have more data for just three numbers. Is there something more to look for? And the situation changed a bit when Maldacena computed the three-point function due to standard Sloan inflation. He defined like a skewness parameter, and he said that this skewness parameter should be proportional to FNL times the variance of the two-point function. This number is 10 to the minus 5. And he found that his calculation was order 10 to the minus 7, which means FNL 10 to the minus 2. This is, so far, way undetectable. This means that non-Gaussianity standard Sloan inflation are very small. But a few months after, this model was proposed, motivated by inflation, called DBI inflation, which was a perfectly fine model, but was predicting a large value of non-Gaussianity, FNL 10 to the 2, that is 4 order of magnitude larger. If this signal is extremely, and this is currently detectable, actually it's already beginning to be constrained. So this is an incredibly interesting signature, because if we have non-Gaussianity, then we can look for something else, not just one number. In particular, non-Gaussianity, we know that the CMB looks quite Gaussian. So this number here doesn't mean extreme level of non-Gaussianity. And therefore, you will look for non-Gaussianity in the first observable, which doesn't receive contribution for the biggest of the effects, which is the Gaussian part. Therefore, you look for the three-point function. And now, because of momentum translation invariance, the sum of the free momentum must form a cos triangles. And now, because of rotation invariance, scale invariance, this remaining three-point function depends on a function of two scalar variables, the ratio of the modulus of the momentum of the triangles, the two ratios. And this function here is a full function, a scalar function of two variables. This, in fact, is such a complicated function, I can plot a function of two variables, I can make a 3D plot, and this is the 3D plot I can make as a function of the ratio of the triangles, of the size, which is like the shape. The value of f is plotted on the y-axis, and this is clearly, these are not a number or two numbers, these are an infinite set of numbers. This function has a peak, has a tail, has some limits, some features. This is clearly an amount of information which is unprecedented before. But this was coming from a strange model. And is this a generic signature of inflation? What are really the generic signature of inflation? And in order to address this question, I thought it was useful to apply to inflation the techniques of effective field theory, which have been the technique which have been guiding us in high energy particle physics and in theoretical and in high energy theoretical condensed matter physics in the last 30 years or so. And I think that they were not applied to inflation. And in particular, by effective field theory, I mean the description of a system through a lowest dimensional operator compatible with the symmetries. So how do you apply effective field theory to inflation? Well, in order to do that, you have to think of inflation in the most essential way, which is just the fact that inflation is telling us that there is a de Sitter phase followed by standard FRW universe. This means that since de Sitter ends and begins the FRW, this means that there is a physical clock that is telling to de Sitter that to end. Time translation must be spontaneously, must be broken in de Sitter. This is not full de Sitter because de Sitter at that point ends. And therefore, this means that there is a physical clock which measures times during the de Sitter phase. And this means that there is a privileged slicing during the de Sitter phase, where one can take this physical clock, whatever it is, to be uniform. In particular, I'm not assuming that, but in particular, one thinks of inflation realized by a normal scalar field. This is just corresponds to the gauge where delta phi is equal to zero. Phi is taken to be uniform. This can be achieved with a simple time diffeomorphism. Now, once one is this gauge, in this gauge, once one writes down all the operators, yes.
I mean, it is the
but I'm not assuming this. Just to give an example, how in this you would find this gauge if it was a scalar field, okay. Just with the time diffeomorphism. But whatever it is, what is drawing inflation, you can always go to the gauge where this physical clock is uniform. And then you chose that as a clock. And then when you are in this gauge, you apply the rules of effective field theory. That is, you write down all the operators with the fields you have. And the fields you have are just the metric fluctuation at this point, because you don't have any more metric field. Metric field is homogeneous by the structure. And it's compatible with the residual symmetries, which are space-time dependent spatial diffeomorphism. You can change coordinates in each of these lines. For example, function times I can write in this Lagrange, because the time translation is not preserved. Also, tensors with upper zero indices are also fine, they are invariant under this discipline. And also, for example, geometric objects built with these three-dimensional slices, like an extrinsic curvature of these slices, and of course, covariant derivatives. Then one can show that writing this operator, expanding fluctuation and expanding derivatives, like we do for effective theory, the most generic Lagrange for single field inflation one can write is the following Lagrange. Well, here there is the Einstein-Hilbert term. Then there is a piece linear in the fluctuation. The background value G00 is minus one. There is a sort of time-dependent cosmological constant. Then there is a piece quadratic in the fluctuation, a piece cubic, and pieces of higher derivative, which involve the extrinsic curvature, and so on and so forth. If you want this, you can think as a time-dependent cosmological constant. The limit period in the sitter, you get in the value, there will be value of the cosmological constant. You can see, right? If start is zero, this is the value.
And these M2 and M3 are arbitrary functions?
That's the point, yes. I will say, yeah, these are arbitrary functions. In fact, here I'm already using all the information the sitter was giving. The fact that I was in the sitter is giving me, is fixing just these two terms here, and nothing else, yes.
Yeah. Do you worry, in the case that this is fixed by the value of a physical scalar mm-hmm. field, do you worry about what fixed the surface by equals constant, what keeps it space-like? So if you let the dynamics above fluctuations, eventually will take your surface phi as constant from space-like to developing cusps to time-like and null.
I think, the factor which make it non-time-like, the direction, if inflation ends, this must be time-like direction. Mm-hmm. There are non-perturbative effects which make very short scale fluctuation, which make it space-like. But it's a thing we're interested in energy scales which are comparable to Hubble. And in on the scales, this is it's assumption, but it's the assumption that the time translation is broken and the inflation ends.
It's certainly valid for slow roll. If you make bubble nucleation, you will get null.
Yeah, it's valid when there is a physical clock. You didn't miss the roll. I mean, when you have a physical
inside
clock, evolving. Yeah, evolving your roll. But this can be incredibly fast rolling. No, just a. Any inflation where there is a physical, clock.
And you have to put some lower UV cutoff, otherwise, as long as you assume that there is a dynamics in the field, you will have this very.
Yeah, the cutoff you just estimate from here. I won't spend time on that, but here you have Lagrangian. In Lagrangian, it's a contained. Given the coefficients here, you can see what is the cutoff and you check.
Another question. So G00, so if you're breaking diffeomorphism invariants, G00 is the lapse.
Is the lapse?
The lapse.
Yes.
And usually the action of general relativity is just linear in the lapse. There are no terms, lapse squared, lapse cubed, etc. Is there any diffeomorphism invariant?
Usually the lapse is not dynamical, it's a constrained variable. But here, in fact, because of this, is becoming dynamical. And in fact, I will reintroduce next. There is a one scalar divisor field in this Lagrange because one diffeomorphism is broken. So I will insert that in a second. So I think that
you just don't put delta G normal Q?
Well, it just depends on how many processes you log. Here we look just the number of CID, so I just take the number of perturbations is the number of legs in the process you're interested, and the number of derivatives is the coolest you want. And we just stop. But of course, you can go on. These are dots.
So this is to be understood as there's some physical field which is a clock and you gauge fix.
Yeah.
And what you're actually constructing is the action subject to that gauge fixing.
And now I will undo the gauge fixing. But this is done in a way that I'm assuming nothing about the fundamental Lagrange. So it is, But I will put it back. In a second, I think you should.
Is there a reason why there's no G naught dot terms?
G?
G naught not dot terms? You
had no this is a derivative terms. I didn't put because these are the one I'm using. Those are already quite irrelevant. The fact of the is there, but it doesn't have more correction. It's dominated by other terms. These are the dominating terms I'm going. Okay.
And that's the scale that makes them dominate is what? What's the small parameter?
The small parameter? Well, it's a higher derivative term, so it needs to be.
But is it higher derivative being compared to H, or is it being compared to H dot, or is it
m plus square H dot? So you see every time here is m to the fourth. So you have to make it. But unfortunately, you cannot go into the limit, which is important because that term here is higher derivative term, so it puts a cutoff down. So you can really show that if you're making that operator relevant, you are putting the cutoff at the Hubble scale, and that you don't want to do. So, but you can really see this. I mean, it's not this. You put it and you check it. It's internal to the Lagrange. So this I will get to the simplification limit in a second. But just to say that this is it's very generic. Now it's not very explicit, but it's very generic because, for example, contains all models on inflation we know. For example, standard for inflation, the Lagrange type is in the case where considered just become where phi is homogeneous. Just become a function of G0, the piece linear in G0, which is this. And the V of 0 t, which is this term. In fact, if you use Einstein equation, you find that. But this term here, this means is an inflation are all absent. But nobody had told us that they should be zero, because by symmetry, they could put them. And in fact, models like the inflation corresponds to all the first line. If I go to the sitter limit and I keep some other operator, I'm getting cost inflation. This is a very strange model. And if I keep still in the city living another operator, we found something else that nobody found before and to which we didn't give a name. But the point is that we found them because we found everything in single inflation. All models are automatically encoded. But clearly, this is an action, as you probably have already noticed. Though it's very generic, it's not incredibly explicit. I mean, this contains standard solar inflation. What is the scalar field fluctuation? There is a scalar fluctuation. What is the kinetic term? The reason why it is so complicated is because this is a the Lagrange of gauge fixed Lagrange on a spontaneously broken gauge symmetry, which has time translation. And this means that there is the Goldstone boson associated with this symmetry, and one can introduce the Goldstone boson to simplify a lot the Lagrange. This simplification is known as Goldstone boson equivalence theorem, and has been applied a lot is usually applied to non abelian broken gauge theories. In fact, let me review briefly how does it work for a non-abelian broken gauge theory, where there is a Mach term for the gauge boson, where the gauge boson have this kind of are the MUA and TA are the generators. Under a gauge transformation, the following properties: this action is not invariant because it wasn't gauge invariant. In particular, I get this effect on the Mach term, which wasn't gauge invariant. The kinetic term is invariant; this term not. And I get the dependence on the gauge transformation, which is as the form of xi e to the I ta, xia, xia are the coordinates on the gauge group. Now, gauge invariant can be fully restored with something called the Stuckelberg trick, by calling the coordinate xa on the Lagrange, which appear in the Lagrange, call them pi a. Pi a goes to boson, like the pions, in fact. And I say that the pi now are dynamical field which transform under Gauss transformation lambda under this complicated relationship, which notice that if this was a U1 field, this relation will be just a shift by a phase, the shift of the Gauss boson. In fact, this is the typical shift of the Gauss boson. Now, once one does this procedure here, now the Lagrange is fully again Gauss invariant. You have reintroduced Gauss invariant, but introduced the Gauss boson. But by color expanding these coefficients, one notice that there are non-renormalizable interactions like this, irrelevant interaction, which imply that the theory is a cutoff for pi m over g. Also, by expanding the covariant derivative, one finds that there are mixing terms like this one, which, however, become irrelevant with respect to the d pi term, the standard kinetic term, for energy much bigger than m. This means that there is a parametrically large in weak coupling interval in energy between m and 4 pi m over g, where the physics of the Gauss boson is perturbative and is decoupled from the transfer polarization. This means that for studying longitudinal polarization in this parametric regime and energy, one just needs to study the Lagrange of the Gauss boson up to small mistakes. This is the equivalence theorem, the Gauss boson equivalence theorem. But what we did so far, gravity is nothing but a Gauss theory, where the Gauss theory is Gauss symmetry is time diffeomorphism. And we just broke time diffeomorphism, so we can do exactly the same trick. We reintroduce the Gauss boson by performing a time diffeomorphism. For example, G00 becomes this function here, and pi is the Gauss boson, which shifts under time translation. Now, another simplification comes from the fact that we realize that in inflation, we still study the theory at high energies. This is because in inflation, the theory starts, the mode, H-mode starts very, very in the UV, but then the Hubble expansion moves to the IR, it's like energy flow. At a certain point, the mode reaches the energy scale of the Hubble. When you are at Hubble, the mode freezes and doesn't evolve anymore. This means that to make prediction, you just need to study the theory of the energy of the Hubble. And this means if this energy of the Hubble is above the mixing scale that one can estimate, then you can, again, just concentrate on the Lagrange of the Gauss boson and forget the metric perturbation. This we can check and often holds. So the procedure is that you introduce the Gauss boson, introduce the full Gauss invariance, and then neglect the metric perturbations, checking that you are in the decoupling regime. And after doing this procedure, you get the following reaction, which I claim now is rather simple, given that it contains all models of single field inflation. In particular, there is a standard, this pi is the Gauss boson, and you can think like delta phi fluctuation. And you find that this is a standard kinetic term here. Then there is a piece pi dot square, which, because of the linearization of time diffeomorphism, contains some cubic interactions. Then there is a piece cubic, and so on and so forth. As I said, all models are unified. In fact, you can really prove theorems on the signal of inflation. And in particular, this term here, we saw that there were zero in standards around inflation. And in some sense, this is really the systematic way of parameterizing the high energy correction to inflation, to slow down inflation. Loops are generating these terms here. And this effect is very, and what we're really putting constraint on when we look at the CMB and W map are really the fluctuation, are really this coefficient here. We're not constraining any particular model of inflation, we're constraining this Lagrange to be those coefficients of Lagrange. This is very similar to what is done sometimes for the standard model for the electro precision test. But in particular, since we have been using the symmetries very strongly, we are seeing explicitly what is fixed by the symmetry and what is not. In particular, notice that the gradient term here, and here the symmetries are the fact that you are very close to the sitter. So notice that the gradient term here, there is no other gradient term here, kinetic term, gradient kinetic term. This is fixed to be m plus square h dot. This is quite surprising. The coefficient is just fixed to be that. And in particular, for example, for h dot bigger than zero, this is the stable sign. And that's why people have never been able to violate before us, been able to violate in a consistent way the energy condition, because they were finding this difficulty, which now it's clear why it's there, because this sign is wrong in that case. And for example, notice, however, that I can change the coefficient of pi dot square thanks to this operator, which effectively changes the speed of sound of the fluctuations. But this is okay, because I'm not Lorentz invariant theory, speed of sound equal one wasn't protected. But notice that because of the nonlinearization, when I pump up this operator, making it means that the speed of sound is being small. And if I make this operator large, I'm forced to have higher cubic interaction, strong cubic interaction. And cubic interaction means that there are interaction, and this means that you are having non-Gaussianities. The perturbation will be non-Gaussian. The field is not free. And this explains why it's a really symmetry reason why some people have found that in the model where the speed of sound was small, the non-Gaussianities were going like 1/c². It's just a symmetry reason. It's very, very explicit. But as a
cube terms, he's got another part of cube term at the very end, though. So
yeah, this is a change. Also, I put some numbers to one, but I mean, this is the number, like these numbers are fixed, but this, I mean, there is a precise relationship.
And dimensionally, it looks a bit peculiar.
Ah, because yeah, because this is not a canonical normalized field, so this pi is dimension time, but you can canonically normalize and you do. Yeah, this
is a pi dot is dimensionless.
Yes, but this is not a problem. You just have to normalize. No, no, but in fact, I think what's
that?
What is it?
Sorry. So, M2 is time dependent.
Sorry?
M2, that's
yes.
Time dependent. So you are fixing that with background?
No, yes, no. In particular, when there is a time dependence, when you reach the ghost boson, M2 of t becomes M2 of t plus pi, and then you can respond. However, I didn't. I'm not going in the full details here, but there is the fact that you are in quasi symmetry implies that there is an approximate shift symmetry for the Boston boson. This means that whenever pi appears below the derivative, like due to the time dependence of the two, it's suppressed by slow log parameter. Like this comes from the fact that the h of t is slowly varying with time, so it's consistent to take this limit. And therefore, here I'm neglecting those terms because there are some. They are suppressed by several logs. So here I'm just giving feature. But you can keep them and just need to stop.
And given that you have a pi dot cube, say, term, why are you grouping the three terms together?
Because this is quite, yeah, it's true, but this is because this comes just when you do the diffeomorphism, there is this combination coming out fixed. Now, you can change this one, but you cannot change this, for example.
But is there another term further down that in the dot
no.
of the dots, which is pi dot?
No, you're right. No, that's why I looked. Yeah, that's why I keep it. No, there's not. That's the miracle of non-linearly realizing time diffeomorphism. If you want, these are very strange things, but that's the idea.
So the claim would be that if I did loops in this theory, I wouldn't generate different coefficients for those two terms. Right?
Well, no, you can because you can generate this.
Yeah,
this is one. Yes.
Do you understand? So, and that, you're saying that's like another realization in Karo perturbation.
Yeah, and in fact, this calculation was done by Toft Beltman. It's a limit that you see. Yeah, I checked. In 74, yeah. But it doesn't do for everything, but you can take a limit and see that.
Yeah, two questions. What happened to the G00 in the determinant of everything?
No, this is diff invariant, so it doesn't generate a pi. This term, when you reinsert it, there is no, when you insert the Gaussian boson, you find no pi, it cancels out, because it was already diff invariant there.
Okay, so is this or is this not the following? Could I have started with general relativity coupled to the pi field, expanded around, fix the gauge, g upper zero is what you wrote, expand around de Sitter, and then you would generate this series?
Expand around the quasi de Sitter, not exactly Sitter, expand around the far W. Right. You mean generativity plus metal, it's not an ampere generativity. Well, maybe I didn't understand your question, but you need to put some terms which explicitly break.
But a step that you didn't show us, but that you presumably did, is you could start with the diffeomorphism invariant theory, uh-huh. explicitly fix the which would have metric in the pi and other fields, explicitly fix the gauge,
expand
around quasi de Sitter,
and you find the one upon. Yeah, and you find the one gauge fixed. You find the one gauge fixed Lagrange unitary gauge at the beginning. Yes, then construction. However, you have to put the metal Lagrange in there. And it's very hard. I don't know. I mean, if it is a current condensation, I mean, who knows? So in this way, we don't have to do many steps. We're reconstructing the metal Lagrange, if you want, from the symmetries. The Lagrange of the Boston boson is just fixed from the symmetries, as usual. And you can construct that whatever is the Lagrangian, which is giving you, fundamental Lagrangian, which is giving you the background. So you could do that. I wouldn't be sure that you're getting everything that way. That's the problem. So that's why we're making this approach.
Okay, and when you...
And notice it's more clear, yeah, you see it's much more clear.
And have you assumed that, that whatever that fundamental Lagrangian is parity invariant? So there's no parity odd terms in this effect?
No, I didn't assume parity invariant.
So there are parity odd terms?
Yeah, they're parity invariant, yeah. I mean, yeah.
So while you're stopped, you said you've got a very general argument that H dot had to be positive, for instance. So you're saying that there does not exist any situations where there's a very slowly contracting inverse. Is that just sounds like that's the arc, that's the conclusion you could draw from your Lagrangian? Is that right?
No, sorry. H dot must be positive. So in contracting universe,
you're saying that H dot had the wrong sign. If I'd done this nonlinear realization, I would have had an instability in pi dot.
So H dot the positive means either expansion with h growing time or contraction with h becoming more negative. Yeah, that is stable.
Oh, sorry, what, if h dot were negative, how would I understand the stability of the pi dot term?
Because you should know that the sign of the, this is the sign of, well, of course you can compute the decay to graph, so you can see immediately that this is a stable sign. Of course, I mean, because the sign of the kinetic term is well defined. Okay, now I'm telling you that this is the wrong sign. You can check it. You can define the sign respect to the Eisenhower term. You see, you don't see it in linear perturbation theory. I mean, if you write a linear equation of motion, that's why people first published paper with Gauss. But the sign is well defined. I mean, in fact, you can just the asking is the kinetic energy positive or negative.
I'm not sure which way you're arguing it. Are you arguing
it? Just looks peculiar because if h dot is negative, it looks like you have the wrong sign for the pi dot.
No, h dot negative, but h dot negative, you have the wrong sign for the.
You have the wrong sign.
Yes. No. But the sign, the global sign, I'm not telling you. G0 is minus one.
Just make sure you're right. You're arguing that one sign is forbidden, is that right?
Potentially, yes.
Yes.
But this is zero.
Okay, so then I go back to the first question. So you're saying that one choice is possible. You can't have h dot positive or negative.
Yeah, one of the two is unstable, yes.
And so that would mean that the statement would be that if I just went and tried to find solutions to Einstein's equation, you're saying one of your claims would be that they don't exist.
Then they are not stable. In fact, I will spend one slide to explain how you can make them stable, but they are not stable. In fact, there is a huge literature of phantom cosmology where people study W as the minus one, which is h dot bigger than zero now.
Yeah.
Up to our paper, the only one I know are ghosts, are inconsistent. So
depends on the sign of the rest of the term. So you can multiply everything by minus sign.
That's important. Interactions. Of course, minus, but also the GR pair.
If this is all there is, I can just flip the sign of everything, and there is no problem.
No, sorry. Should I still that? Again, I'm just considering the leading effect. Of course, I wasn't assuming to be the same. Just on this, but. The sign of GR is fixed, so you can multiply the sign of GR, but that's okay, then you're making clear, but the relative sign respect to the GR term is fixed, and this fixes the decay to gravitons. If the sign of is wrong, you compute the decay to graviton that you don't see a linear level, and you get infinite times. Infinite, because it's Lorentz imbalance scattering, you boost it, it's infinite. Okay, so it's really bad. It's as bad as it can be.
I'm still talking about the sign. If you said G0 is minus 1, that's not G0.
No, I agree with you, but...
usually kinetic energy has...
This term here, for h dot, for h dot positive, this term should be negative. I think it is because I just put the minus sign from the DJ. I'm not studying now the sign. It's very simple,
I think there's a number on minus sign.
Now, since I studied the effect of the meta field, I'm not considering that. But you can see... You know what is the sign that it should be. Now, what do you mean? I mean, anyway.
It's a bread business.
So these two conventions, right? Which is zero.
What?
There's these two conventions. Either you're part of
the normal system of energy, energy always comes to the power. Sandra, one choice is like you're not allowed to be minus one, and that's where something that windows is great.
Okay, anyway, I mean.
So you're saying that you get this instability for which equation of state?
H dot bigger than zero, which is dot less than
one. Yeah, but you say for omega bigger than one.
Omega smaller than minus one. That's smaller than minus one. In fact, probably you have the claim. Some people illuminated this a lot and said that there were ghosts in the standard model, standard throughout. Now we'll show how you can avoid, but you have to work. the problem. So okay, I mean, the sign, maybe I didn't choose the right convention, but okay, I mean, I wasn't planning to spend it. So what I think is important here, but I mean, it's clearly that one sign is good, one better. Okay. And okay, here is the sign. I mean, then standard roll inflation is stopped to negative, and it's stable. So you know that the right sign is the one.
Yes.
Okay. And then you can forget about sign conventions. Now, what I think is important, however, with this Lagrange, is not only the symmetries, but the fact that some terms are free to be chosen and are free and constrained by the sitter, by the fact that you are in the sitter. And in particular, these terms here can be big, the interaction can be there in the Lagrange with order one fraction of parameter space, and this means that you can have large longer signs. This means that you can really begin to plot this function here, and before, we plotted this F for what was the DBI inflation. And now this plot here, you just need to know, you just need to know that this function is a function of the shape of the triangle because of the symmetries. And this point here corresponds to in the domain. So it's a bidimensional domain and then plot F for that. This point here corresponds to equilateral configuration. This point here corresponds to squeezed triangles. And this point here corresponds to flattened triangles like this one. You see that the models which were proposed before had this kind of shape, picked on equilateral configuration. But in reality, there is a full one parameter family of solutions. Fixing the overall magnitude of the longer sign, I can change the relative coefficient. And this shape can be changed from this to this. This is clearly a huge amount of information. I mean, I want to stress it a lot because this is not numbers, these are functions. This is like having a scattering amplitude as a function of the angle. It's very similar to what happens to accelerators. And in fact, if you measure this, you can really map from the Lagrangian under the assumption this standard single, under the assumption of single field inflation, you can map to the parameters of the Lagrangian and measure the coefficient here. This is really mapping from what you see in the sky to what you look in to the Lagrangian, the fundamental Lagrangian, which is quite surprising that you can do this. And in particular, there is really, as you change the relative coefficient, you're getting really one parameter of shapes. And I would like to stress here that there is never where the shape can change from being picked on equilateral configuration to being picked on these flat triangles. Any linear combination is possible, but you never have a big signal here in the so-called squeeze limit, where one of the k's goes to zero. This is a theorem which was stated by Maldacena, but really hand-wavily proved. And in fact, we are able to prove it thanks to our effective theory, because we just have all the models and we can just check it, which tells us that in the limit in which one of the momenta goes to zero, the three-point function becomes proportional. That's the two-point function times the tilt of the power spectrum. And this is an order, an FNL corresponds to an error of order 10 to the minus 2, which is undetectable. This is a theorem, and it's good news. It tells us that if you are seeing non-Gaussianities on this limit, you are ruling out single field inflation. Single field inflation, any model, cannot give you that. And the situation is even better because not only if you detect it, you rule out single field inflation, but multi-field model of inflation, or even the bouncing cosmology that I explain later, give non-Gaussianities exactly of the kind which is picked on this quiz, in this squeeze limit, while single field was not picked there. And now I don't have time to explain how these models are generated, but it's rather simple mechanism, and you can have this kind of non-Gaussian which are called local, which are picked on the squeeze configuration. Now, I think from this it's clear that non-Gaussianities are theoretically well motivated. Single field inflation, maybe they are not the earliest model of slow inflation, but single field inflation can give large non-Gaussianity. And even most important, they have an incredible wealth of information. You can rule out single field inflation. And even if it is one of, and if it happens to be the one of single field inflation, you are really measuring the interaction of the inflaton, the most non-trivial part of the Lagrangian. And clearly, after you look at this, you go to the data and ask, well, are they in the sky now? And you begin look at the CMB and ask, is this map non-Gaussian? And the point is that we are ready to do so. There is enough information in the data to look after non-Gaussianities. This is a step that cosmology is taking now, because after study for many years, the two-point function, which was one number, we have enough information that we can go to the next non-trivial information, and which is a big qualitative change, which is the three-point function. And here we concentrate on the CMB, which is so far the most important. And it's particularly interesting because, for example, last year it had been claimed the free sigma detection of the FNL local. So how you look for non-Gaussianities in the sky? Yes?
I kind of know how you get models that give you the lateral triangle. Do there exist models that, you know, more microscopic
No, I just found it. This comes from the effective theory. Nobody.
There's no microscopic.
No. In fact, that shape was new, was found thanks to the effective theory. Okay. And in fact, now we give you the result, but it's not analyzed in the data. That could be huge. In fact, when I plug it there, I'm hoping to be huge. But the answer will be later, I give you. But so I don't know. It's up to find it now. However, so how to analyze the phenomenal scientists in the sky, in the CMB? Well, first of all, it's the temperature position defined on a sphere. So you take the spherical harmonic transform, and you get the spherical harmonic coefficients. Now, you can take, for example, the two-point function of this spherical harmonic coefficient, ALMs, are just the standard CX that you usually see in the plots of the peaks. Now, we're looking for the three-point function in the sky. And therefore, it's pretty much clear that this will translate in a three-point function of ALMs. Now, how do you look for the three-point function of ALM in the sky? I mean, you have only one realization, one sky. So how do you do that? Well, let's think. I mean, you look for a three-point function, you try to group or to get a non-linear non-trivial correlation between three modes. So what do? You take all possible triplets of data, and you combine them, you multiply, and you sum all the possible triplets with a weight, which is, however, the weight as clever as you can find. And of course, the weight should be proportional to the signal you expect from that triplet. So this is the weight should be, you want to weight a lot, a triplet which should have a lot of signal. But the signal should be also inversely proportional to the noise. The CL contains, for example, also the noise. And you don't want to weight a lot, a triplet which with a lot of noise. For example, a triplet on the galaxy, you don't want to count it. And then you take all the sums. However, the life is not so simple because CMB is diagonal in Fourier space, in the ALM space, but the foreground and the noise is diagonal in real space. For example, the galaxy, we know what it is. It is well-defined in real space. And also the noise is not only diagonal in real space, but also is very anisotropic. For example, this is the map of the noise of double map, and some points are looked more times than others. And this is the bright means low noise, and this is the very anisotropic map of the noise. This fact implies two things. First of all, the covariance matrix is off diagonal because the noise is diagonal in real space, so in Fourier space is as maximum non-diagonal, and implies a linear term in the estimator, a term which is proportional to just one power of the data, which practically take off of the anisotropy of the noise. Now, it is possible to show that the way in the estimation of the data which we are doing this way, applying this something called estimator, actually the estimator of the data, is the optimal technique to get the limits on the parameters we want. This is possible, it satisfies the Kramerau bound, which is the bound on the variance of the estimator, which is something non-trivial, and it's good to know because this is a kind of a new feature, so you would always wonder, oh, maybe I can do better. So nothing can be better than this. And it's also particularly important because this sum here, there are six sums of these, and they go up to 1 million. So you cannot make this sum trivially. It takes the lifetime on the universe, even on a supercomputer, the small supercomputer. So these I just want to mention. You have to use some tricks. This I would like to mention. And so it's good to know that you are doing the optimal analysis because you cannot do all the analysis you want. And this is good to know. And I would like to mention because cosmology, which was a data starving theory, field, now it's even too many data. You have to begin to use some tricks to analyze them because otherwise you never finish. And in particular, this estimator here, it wasn't the one used by WMAP. And in fact, it reduces the variance of WMAP collaboration by 60%. 60% is not a small number. It's like doubling or triplicating the lifetime on the satellites. We're paying for these satellites. So it's good to, I think the Americans mostly, but okay. I mean, also the WMAP. I think there is a big group, CETA. It's good to, we have to use it as best. This is 60%. Also, since they didn't know really about what were the shapes they could use to analyze, so they were just analyzing by chance the one from multifield. Instead, we generalized the shape to other two shapes. In particular, they were not using the linear term, and also they were not using the inverse matrix. And this allows us, for example, to treat the foreground in the optimal way. In fact, this is technically a little challenging, and therefore we implemented this in several steps. Also, because both technical challenge and also the understanding of non-Gaussianity has been growing while WMAP was going on. So this estimator has been applied to the data step by step. Now it's implemented in something which is in progress, sure. But these are already the former steps have been adapted by WMAP collaboration. The linear term, the shapes, and the inverse matrix, they have been in and they will be in. This, I think, is a very beautiful example of an interaction from theory to experiment. And I think it's a good of cosmology, a field of cosmology, that the theories can really go all the way down to the experiment, change the way the best experiment of cosmology is doing the analysis. And I think it's also a sign of great attitude of the WMAP collaboration, because it's this, they denoted very clever. But coming to what we are going to do now, for single field inflation, we are seeing that there are two shapes that you can generate, and then in a combination of these two shapes can be generated. So therefore, you analyze them at the same time, and what you'll get is not an interval, but you will get a counter plot of the values of the FNL. And thanks, as we were saying, to the relation to the interaction, from this counter plot, there is explicit relation which gives you the coefficient of the Lagrangian. So you get from the counterplot, you can get really a coefficient of the Lagrangian. So this is very similar, as I said, to what is done in particle physics. In particular, as we said before, this shape was never been analyzed in the data. So here you can get this, or you might even get lucky and get a detection. Unfortunately, I'm usually not lucky. And so we apply the estimator to the data, and we found no evidence for non-Gaussianity. All these three shapes are now analyzed, and we found that there is the local shape, the one from multi-field inflation or from the bouncing cosmology, which is of order on the two sigma region. In particular, because it's really close to the two sigma, where you combine with the data from this large case structure, which I'll spend one minute later. But this is not, there is no evidence for non-Gaussianity, just on the two sigma region. And of course, this means that we don't agree with the three sigma detection that was claimed. The other two shapes are still compatible with non-Gaussianity. Now, here I spent some time explaining this new signal of non-Gaussianity. I should stress that this has been understood only recently. In fact, this was never been, is not even analyzed yet. And in the sense that we have great big control on this now, so I can explain in detail later, but first of all, there are more data. These are 3 year data, now we have 5 years. On top of that, there is some strange things in the data. We fully agree with the WMAP team when we sub-optimize our estimator to match them. We're not able to reproduce them. So there is something strange going on, but it's hard to make this translate. Anyway, this is finished. In the sense that these are more data, this is the optimal estimator, the end.
So you've got a better estimator, and the fact that you see no signal should be more conclusive, it sounds like.
Yeah, of course. I mean, the error box is 50% better, and also, we have more data, so this is the number. And actually, there are also more subtle points. This is, the optimal estimator is unique. When you try to sub-optimize it because you're not able to do everything, there are choices, and that's why we cannot say for certainly that there was something wrong in the listing. Maybe they were just choosing something strange. Okay, this is the optimal, so it's unique and it's the best. So I think we should just take this. So here I've been talking about non-Gaussianity because I think they are a very promising signal, and cosmology is getting ready to see this, to analyze this. Next year's experiment, as I will show, are measuring even the standard non-Gaussianity from evolution. But why we need to probe inflation more? At the end, maybe inflation is already there, so there is no need. First of all, it's always good to probe. I mean, these non-Gaussianity are just would teach you about the interaction, teach you about the most trivial part of the Lagrangian. But I think it's more important now that there are working bouncing cosmology. So bouncing cosmology have been tried to achieve in several steps for some time. But I think now we are at the level where we have a consistent model, which I think, I will say, is a little less compelling. But still, for a long time, people have been confident about inflation, where the Eastern universe undergoes an exponential expansion and then the standard F at W speed. But the universe could have been just evolved from a contraction phase where A decreases, the scale factor decreases, then bounces back, and then begins to expand in a decelerating way. This is the so-called bounces model, and the models which are proposed so far add two, to me, important problems. The first is that, as I showed before, the bounds require h dot bigger than zero. And this, at the deep levels, it means that the null energy condition is violated. Timo nu is a stationary tensor, and mu are null vector. And this violation, as we saw before, is usually associated to instabilities. And people have found that. Yes, but the bounds should happen to the Planck scale. I mean,
if you're working in some theory beyond GR, like string theory, there's no such.
You mean GR?
No, but there are
different invariants. It seems to me he was using only different morphism invariants.
No. You have to be close to GR. I mean, you can.
But I think
to be in the regime where there's some effective field theory. If the bounce is happening, it involves Planck scale physics.
Okay.
Beyond
GR. But even beyond control. That's the other option, but then there was no, the control was not there. So
in progress.
Yeah, so this is another direction which is in progress, yes. So far there was no consistent sense control. Sure. Yeah. So instead, I will explain.
All the quantum cosmology stuff is in control, if you're happy with being around as a wormhole. Well, maybe it's a longer discussion, but
not full control.
Okay, I mean, control means the standard. But okay, I will show in the next how I can give one stable bounds in considerable effective theories. And then maybe there are others. I'll give you mine, which in some sense is unique. But then, also the other problem was that the perturbation generated were not scale invariant. That is the one which are computed independent of the bounds. These two problems have been solved. This one I explain later and in the next slide. But this one has been progressively by an idea by Neil, who collaborates. So who noticed that the isocupator scalar field rolling down in exponential potential, if it is an isocupator field, it produces a scaling invariant spectral perturbation, which can then be converted then into the vital perturbation. And this now, assuming this, you have a stable one bounds of cosmology, and this is a signature. The signature are there is no gravitational waves. And also, it produces generic a large level of non-consensus of the local kind, the one of multi-field inflation, of this specific kind, not the one. It's predicting and it's working. So let's see. Let me explain how you can have a bouncing phase in effective field. Is the h dot bigger than zero possible? This is a very strange situation because it corresponds to a scalar field. If you think a scalar field going up is potential without slowing down. Now. Kind of strange, but apparently it's possible. Let me see how you can make this situation stable. Since H dot bigger than zero is very hard, let's make H dot positive as very small positive. Therefore, H dot is small but positive, so you're very close to the signature. And therefore, the Lagrange I just developed for the inflation could be applied here. And in fact, this is the quadratic Lagrange I have. And now, this sign here, I remind you, is wrong. This is correct, so it doesn't make sense, but believe me, it's wrong for h dot bigger than zero. But you can change the sign of that term, or the quadrat square, by changing this term here, as we noticed before, which changes the speed of sound. But you can also change the gradient term, you cannot change, but higher derivative term from the extrinsic curvature can give you gradient terms.
There was an expansion outside.
Well, if you want, it's Hubble over M. Okay, if you want. Is the energy scale. Still, I'm probably anything the energy scale of the Hubble because it's still M is this M here. It can be a Planck, but it can be something. Okay. Is the M is somehow related to the cutoff? I mean, I'm a bit vague here, but you can work out the cutoff is related to M. It's Hubble over the cutoff, and the cutoff. Now, if you write down the special relation with this general Lagrange. Once you fix the sign of quadrosity that is positive thanks to this, to the direct sign thanks to this, then you get this special relation. Where, now remember that the inflation, and we are very close to inflation, the bound starts in the UV, very high energy, and then it shifts down. In high energy, omega squared goes like this k to the fourth, the term like here. This is a very non-relativistic special relation, but it's stable. It's fine, and there is no problem with that. Just, I didn't test for Lorentz invariants, we are not in the Lorentz invariant background. And stable.
We know in which this description is very. So you need decoupling and you need this.
A cutoff.
So what is the.
Well, the cutoff, I mean, you can estimate this. As I was saying before, I mean, it's a little complicated expression of which the hot.
So what is the range of omega for which this is very.
Between. This expression is from Hubble to the cutoff. Now, the cutoff is much higher than Hubble. I don't remember exactly. It's proportional to M. It's, you can check.
I mean, if you draw this dispersion relation and you put the lower and maximum up, it will be clear.
What do you mean? Sorry, I mean, it is an energy range.
Just to see where you can, where this curve is.
Energy. So this is energy. This is the cutoff lambda, which is greater to M and H dot. It's a complicated fact. You have to canonically normalize. There are interactions.
I'm asking what is the position of this curve?
Now, so this is lambda, this is Hubble. So this curve is here. Now, energy lower than this, I have to keep an eccentric gravity that I'm not showing here, but you can, of course. It's very simple.
What is the shape of the curve in spectrum? This dispersion relation.
Ah, you want, so you want omega. Omega, it's k to the 4, omega, let's say omega, I don't understand, sorry. Omega is a function of k, they're asking this.
I'm just saying, because I think
where you can believe that.
Yeah, when can you, so.
You can believe.
You have a curve, which portion of the curve do you see? I'm just, so suppose you draw the full curve, it's a quartic with the bumps. I'm just asking, it's just a question about.
Yeah, it, when omega.
Can you draw the full curve?
Well, okay, when omega, so omega should be in this region, yeah. Okay.
And the curve, can you draw the full curve?
If I write omega here, it's goes like k to the fourth. So it's k to the fourth, and then omega goes like k squared here, something like that. And then
h dot is positive, right? So it's
In fact, the point is that the k squared should never be in effect. So what we can do is that it goes like k squared up to energy over the Hubble. Okay, while the never k is important. Now, when you are at energy over the Hubble, this dispersion ratio is not true anymore, because I forgot here the mixing gravity. In other words, there is a Hubble friction here. So there will be a 3H omega, if you want, also here. And we know the solution was this, is omega equals 0 in this case. So when you get to here, you're just getting to this.
So you're saying you never see in your window?
No, that's the point. That's the good point.
You never see
instability, growth of the mode. Yeah, that's the good point. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the good point. Yeah, so so it goes like k squared. Then in the infrared, sooner or later, this dominates. Mm-hmm. But if it dominates when you are already at energy scale omega over the Hubble, then you know the solution is. And you can actually check, but this is simple explain. You see that the omega becomes constant. There is no, this instability is not powerful to affect. Okay? It's not able to source the mode because it just frees the mode.
It frees, okay, yeah. It frees because.
Because of Hubble friction. So the dispersion ratio gets changed. Here, again, if you want to get this. So here, this dispersion ratio is in the coupling limit, but an energy scale more than the Hubble. You have to mix with gravity, and the mixing is not negligible. It's really changing the dispersion ratio, and the solution is omega equals 0. It's physically very simple. It's just a Hubble friction. This is an expanding unit. It's like inflation. The difference is that it's bigger than 0. Is it clear? If you want, I didn't write the full equation because it gets very messy. In fact, you cannot really neglect the mixing with gravity, even inside horizon. And when you include it, you find that there is a parametric window where this condition happens, that is, it's always stable up to when it crosses the horizon, you just solve the equation, not that you assume it freezes, and then you see it freezes. And in this parametric window, the system is stable, and H dot is positive. It's positive, but not that H dot cannot be as large as we want. It should be positive, but not too much larger than H squared. From this, it's clear this was the most difficult part. You're getting a stable system with H dot bigger than 0. And the first one is the other one. And from here, the bounce is really simple to get. And I think this completes the picture. So we have a bouncing model which is consistent and carry on the ratio. I think the status is still that it's less compelling than inflation, in my opinion. But clearly, in work is in progress, one can improve. I've been one of the authors, I think, yes. But progress is being made, and maybe it can be made more. Even more important, I think, or compare.
Can you, with this other question, stable bounce solution, what is the size of the curvature at the bounce in this window, in this analysis?
What is the maximum curvature?
Or whatever,
the
something
it's below the front here. It can be parametrically lower than, it's nothing to do with the plus k.
So n is your cutoff and n bar is another.
Okay, apart from subtleties that, okay, let's assume that n is the cutoff and the
and then bar
is. No, but it's smaller than the cutoff. The curvature can be. It's not. It's within the effective theory. It's The scale of the bounce, actually, I mean, the curvature is really not big, the bounce. It's the point is that you're doing this bounce in effective theory. I mean,
So m bar, what is the difference between m and m bar?
Well, you see, m bar is the coefficient which can associate with the extrinsic curvature, and this one is the coefficient to delta g00 square. I mean, you can think all of them are the same size. I mean, if one is there, you think all of them are there. But in principle, they're independent. Okay?
So I can use this also to make inflationary models. I believe that's not minus one.
Yeah, this is the only model, for example, which gives blue gravitational field.
But when h goes to zero, then this breaks down at the bounce.
Yeah, in fact, what at the bounce, very good. The bounce, there is a small instability, but the more you can make this instability last for the time of what the half.
Okay.
So the more, if you want, the instability, the more grows by fraction of what you want. So it doesn't go out of the effective theory. It's not a UV instability. It's an infrared stability. So the rate is dominated by half. Mm-hmm. And okay, so, okay. I mean, yeah. That's why I said this is less compelling. It's possible, but it's a bit hard. But okay. But I think even more interesting somehow, this current acceleration of the universe can be the current acceleration, can be what we're seeing now. It could be inflation. And but it could be inflation with W, which is not bigger than zero, that is with W as a minus one. People, in fact, is putting constraint on these Ws. And we're going to probe it very well. So far, there was no model, as far as I know, with W less than minus one. And this is the model. So if you see it, there are big chances that this is the model. Now, since we're talking about the cosmological constant, I would like to, the current acceleration, I would like to remind that.
Can I just to go back? If I see W equals minus one, is there something else that you're.
Yes.
That,
it is.
You
see, I'm already way over.
Okay.
No, but the model is dynamic on this one. So it tends to cluster. It's response density perturbations. So it tends to cluster and affects the way structure gets formed. So then this is as a sphere of some practice equal to zero, so it clusters more. So you can try to move to get it there from there. I'm doing some work on that, but it's interesting.
Is it ISW or?
Yes, we have all these fields. Yeah, all sorts of cluster count in principle should enhance them. But all the constraints which come from ISW should be redone because they were done in the theory which was wrong, with PS for one. And it shouldn't change a lot, but in principle they have to be redone. And we are working and we are thinking. But let me remind that. If W is less than minus one, is equal to minus one, and already now W is very close to minus one, it really smells like a cosmological constant, is my opinion. And this explanation is, I think, very, very interesting. It points in a direction which is very interesting. Nobody, I think, got that close. But there is it's raising also a lot of questions. This is maybe what we have to expect of the possible solution of the cosmological constant. It shouldn't be easy. And this is a picture changing and very complicated. And as I explained in the beginning, it needs eternal inflation in the past to populate in a way in a vacuum. And I think this forces us to understand eternal inflation, not only because maybe it's a phase of our past, because if inflation is there, maybe the also eternal inflation. So it's a phase of our universe, but maybe because it's connected to the biggest of the problem, which is the cosmological constant problem. And I think this forces us to really understand what is eternal inflation in a very detailed way. Now, I'm a little over time. I didn't have thought about this question. Can I have some more time?
Yeah,
10 minutes, probably. Ten.
I would just say if people want to leave, they should feel free to.
That's even better. Yeah.
And those who don't want to leave will stay. Don't be embarrassed.
Yeah, please, I'm okay.
Please don't be embarrassed.
Because at least there's a bit of change.
You have something you have to do, but I want to listen, so, yeah.
Okay, so thanks. I mean, so I'm more than asking questions. So,
yeah.
So now, what is eternal inflation? This, I think, is forcing us to really understand it. And I think the way it's understood so far was maybe enough until maybe inflation was there. But now we think chances are that inflation is there and it's connected to the problem of the cosmological constant. So what is inflation? As we said, the standard, what is eternal inflation? If we take a standard Rolle model where the field is rolling down the potential, it's true that when it goes down, it produces, in a typical Hubble time, the field advances by a classical advancement over the 5 dot h to minus 1. However, in this bubble time, two things happen. A lot of bubble patches are roughly dependent are produced over the E to the 3. And also, in each bubble patch, there is a quantum jump of order half. It's clear that something strange happens when the quantum jump is comparable to the classical jump, because then it's clear that chances that in one of these patches, the field has gone up instead of going down, thanks to the quantum jump. And at this point, it's clear that in this regime, maybe inflation is never really anything. Maybe it's a term. Okay, this argument is quite physical, but it is not at all. And at the end, I think it will be quite right. But it's clear that it's not rigorous in any term. And also, it has squiggles, very, very squiggles. I think we have to do better. We have to do better for the motivation set. And this is not enough anymore. And in particular, I think it would be nice to make a time inflation well-defined sharp. And in particular, this means that you have to show that it's calculable, that you can do calculation time inflation. And as you said, no calculation at all. And there are two problems with this in practice. There are two problems with this. The first is that the semi-classical description seems to go away when you have any time inflation. And also, if you compute delta rho over rho, inflation model is h squared alpha dot, which is an inflation because of order one. This looks like that you are not, that's the equation of order one, you are not in FRW, and therefore it's much harder to describe. This has been discouraged for a long time, but I think a more closer study to the problem can show that there is room for action. In particular, because during the accelerating phase, when the field is rolling down the potential, in a time inflation, the slope is very, very flat, the potential is very, very flat. So jumps of the input up and down, I'm not going to change a lot of the stress energy tensor. Therefore, I'm not going to change the method fluctuation. In fact, the fluctuation aspect of epsilon, h of n plus, and epsilon will make epsilon even smaller and smaller. So it's even better, it's more the same. Also, the problem with the quantum nature is if the system is strongly coupled. However, we're making the potential flatter and flatter, we're sending away the fluctuations. So, in fact, the dimensionless measure of the non gas, this interaction, which is the ratio of the cubic Lagrangian with the quadratic Lagrangian with the energy scale probe of the system, which is Hubble, goes like the metric fluctuation, it just becomes smaller and smaller, again, because I'm making the potential flatter and flatter. This means that if I start with a box, this means that the system looks stable, it looks stable. I mean, even though it's quantum, it's incredibly weakly coupled. In particular, what's going on? If you start with a box, with an inflaton up in the potential, homogeneous, you let it go, what happens is that in each point of the box, inflation is going on, going on, then phi reaches phi heating, and then it starts to the standard FRW begins. In each point, the duration of inflation is more or less equal. There are small fluctuations on the duration because of the quantum jump, which is small. As you go to eternal inflation, this part becomes even more closer to the Zeta space, but you're making the duration of inflation lasts a different amount of time. And particularly because of the quantum jump, in each place the universe becomes the duration of inflation is very different. And in particular, this is a big consequence on the universe after inflation. If I take an equal time slices here, after inflation, the energy density will shift of order one in a one-hour time, like matter. And therefore, in this amount of time, the energy density has reshifted a lot and is different and clearly is strongly dependent on how long time has passed from the end of inflation. This means that this equal time surface is very different energy density. This means it's very cold. The universe here, we don't know what it is. And that has terrified people for a long time. But it's clear that on this side, we can study what we want. And in particular, it's clear from this picture that this red surface, the surface phi equal phi heating, which is gauging very well defined, undergoes some strange behavior when you approach the phase transition. This, in some sense, is the volume of the box at the end of inflation. How big is this box? Maybe we should study this surface. In order to study this surface, there are some subtleties we have to address, because this phi is a quantum field. So on that is most phi equals phi heating is not a well-defined statement, because this field on short scale fluctuates a lot. However, we can smooth the field. We're not interested in very fast fluctuations which go forward and backward in one epsilon, one instant of time. We're interested in the field to cross phi equals phi heating, for order enable time, so that the metric is time to react and can the standard FRW universe can begin. You exit inflation. This means that we can smooth the field of scale of order lambda and much smaller than Hubble. That is less scale, much longer than Hubble. And this achieves two results. First, that is okay for reheating, and also the commutator of the field and the derivative go approximately to zero, which means that we can treat the system as a classical stochastic system with a Gaussian statistic. The Gaussian statistic is just coming from the fact that we have a approximate free field. In particular, if one study the perturbation of the inflaton, delta phi, the value of the inflaton minus the classical value that would have at that point to the classical evolution, the two-point function of the inflaton, smoothed on this physical cutoff, goes linearly with time. It goes linearly with time because every Hubble time, one new mode is redshifted inside the cutoff and contributes to the variance. The fact that this variance grows linearly with time means that the system follows the diffusion equation, which that you can solve, and you can get the standard solution, which is the solution of a random walk. You have a Gaussian perturbation divided by variance, which grows linearly with time. What happens is that the field, if you start with phi equals zero here, as a function of time in each point, it goes on average towards the end of phi variating, following the classical trajectory, which is linear in time. But then you have a random walk on top of that. At a certain point, the random walk crosses phi equals phi reheating. In particular, the probability to reheat, we're really interested in this, the probability to reheat at time t is nothing but the probability that at time t you have a size of the fluctuation equal to what is missing you to get to phi reheating, that is phi reheating minus phi classical. And plugging back here, you get this expression, which at late time goes linearly with time because there is h cubed t here. So this is the probability to reheat at time t. And now we're ready to study the volume statistics. Because if you start with a box and let it go, you can begin to study what is the probability distribution of this volume. This is a probability distribution because the system is quantum, so every time the volume is slightly different. So what you really ask is the probability distribution, particularly near eternal inflation. The quantum fluctuation are huge. So what happens, what we can compute to start is the expectation value of the volume of this surface. And the volume is nothing but the integral d3x of the metric at this point. But the metric is just e to the 3ht, because this is just the shifter. So e to the term of the metric, e to the 3ht, reheating time x. Now, the expectation value goes inside the integral because of linearity. Because of the relation and invariance of the shifter, this expectation value is x independent. So this integral I can do, it just gives the initial volume of the box. And now the expectation value of e to the 3ht reheating is just the integral dt of e to the 3ht times the probability to reheat time t. But this was just computed. And then you plug in back, you get this expression. Notice that now this expression either converges or diverges with the integral, either converges or diverges according to the parameter. And in particular, if I insert the pi's and everything that we can put, this shows that when this parameter omega, which becomes less than one, which means that when the potential is flatter than something, with the pi's and everything, something strange occurs. The expectation value of the volume goes to infinity. This, I think, shows two things. First, shows that something strange goes on when this parameter becomes one. There is maybe a phase transition. And second, that calculations are possible. I mean, this is a number with pi's and two's. This is almost trivial, but it wasn't done before. Pi's and two, and the errors on this parameter are of order epsilon. So it's an expansion through all parameters. It's like electroweak theory. I mean, the two-loop effect is alpha respect to the one loop result. And this is an expansion parametrically right, and okay, we can do this. Now, in particular, we can do even something more. We can compute the v to the n, and they all diverge when omega becomes less than one. Does this mean that there is a phase transition in eternal inflation? This doesn't mean that there is an eternal inflation. The answer, not yet, because unfortunately, we can consider this kind of distribution, and this distribution is compatible with what we're finding so far, because this distribution is normalizable, but all the momenta diverge for this distribution. But the probability to have infinite volume is strictly equal to zero. It's just zero. This means that if you have a distribution like this, the box, you let it start the box, let it go, you let the box go, and never the box, the inflation goes forever. You're always finishing. This would not be eternal inflation. This would rule out. This said that the eternal inflation doesn't exist. So we get sure if this is the answer. And in order to do that, we found the bacteria model, which is studied in biology and in math also. We went to the math library to find this thing. And these are bacteria model offered to us a discretization of the inflaton. In particular, there is a discrete line, and the bacteria can live here. And it can jump. I'm almost done. I mean, it can jump. So on the right with probability p and one at each time step, time is discrete. Can jump on the right with probability p and one minus p on the left. Now, before jumping, it reproduces n children every time, n independent bacteria. There is one special site here, such that if the bacteria ends up here, it stays here for the rest of its life. It dies. It stays here forever and not stop reproducing. It's clear that this model represents the discretization of the inflaton potential, like here. The speed of the inflaton is like the difference between p and 1/2. The number of bacteria you generate children at each time step is like the new Hubble volumes you create at each Hubble time. And the number of dead bacteria here are the number of Hubble patches which have exited inflation. And so it's mapped to the volume of the heating surface. How many Hubble patches have you created? And in fact, it's possible to show that one can continue the continuum limit with some precise prescription so that this model really exactly reproduces inflation. And this, in fact, we can verify it matches that for V to the N, so in volume here, I mean the number of dead bacteria, the expectation value of the number of dead bacteria any moment goes to infinity when P, the P to go down, is less than a critical P, which is still larger than 1/2. So there is some drag towards dying. And by the matching condition, this means that exactly when omega, the parameter we found, was less than 1. So this reproduces exactly what we computed on the inflaton side. There is no subtlety. But then there is a theorem, which says that for p less than the critical p, when the average begins to diverge, then the stichium probability becomes different from 1, which means that the probability that the bacteria starts and this sounds, this population, they get extinct, is not 1. That is, some chances that they live forever, which means that the number of the volume you are creating, the probability that the volume is infinite, that they are creating for infinite time a volume, is really different from 0. This is really proving that the thermal inflation really exists, is that this is the statement we wanted. And actually, and if you want, this proves thermal inflation and proves that there is a sharp phase transition at omega equal 1. But actually, we can do more. And I skip the details, but we can notice that the probability distribution of the volume, you can do the Laplace transform, and the Laplace transform follows the differential equation. This is very intuitive, but anti-intuitive, but the differential equation is the problem of a ball in a potential with anti-friction. Of course, this potential is a little strange, because this potential knows about thermal inflation. But the problem of thermal inflation is mapped to a classical mechanical problem of a ball in a potential. Now we can solve the differential equation and do the Laplace transform and get the full probability distribution of the volume. And the probability distribution is this. Now we cannot compute it everywhere. For omega bigger than 1, not in the eternal regime, and for omega less than 1 in the eternal regime. We cannot compute it everywhere, but we can compute it because we can, it's not everything is easy, but we can compute the average, the variance, which tells where the bulk is. Yeah, the omega is, the slope of the potential. Yes, let's measure these are just above and just below, okay, just to be clear. And then we can compute the normalization, the average and the variance, which is which is telling where the bulk of the probability is, and the tails. This is, I think, all what you want to know about the probability distribution. The tails and where the bulk is all what you want to know. Now, I would like to, just to let you notice that in the non-eternal regime, the average of the volume, the distribution is very bigger than the average, and for omega much bigger than 1, very steep potential, where the quantum fluctuations are not important, this average goes to the classical volume that you would get, the classical volume of the box. However, as you approach the phase transition, the volume gets larger and larger thanks to the quantum fluctuation, and reaches a maximum value at the phase transition, which is of order B classical times B classical over B initial. And this B classical initial is a huge factor, is e to the number of the foldings, classical. It's an exponentially large factor, so the volume becomes large, very large. But then something strange happens. That is, when you enter in the time inflation regime, the expectation value of the volume, which is finite, so the expectation value of the finite volumes, doesn't grow. And you get some probability of an infinite volume, but if the volume, the probability distribution for a finite volume, we can always peak around this value here. It doesn't grow. That is, either you have an infinite volume or you have a finite volume smaller than something. And this, I think, is something very unintuitive. If any threshold, slow down physics cannot give you a volume both in any regime finite larger than something. This is quite unintuitive. And you see that what happens is that in the Terran regime, for the probability distribution of any finite volume, the Taylor distribution changes from power law to exponential at the value the epsilon, which is exponentially large, because it's this exponentially large. The realization which have once you start inflation, and you have a realization which reaches this amount of volume, and you are in the regime of the parameter of the Taylor inflation, this means that if you are reaching this amount of volume, practically you are going to have infinite volume. You are never, you cannot stop anymore the process. And this tail effect is this one, this is the area which is missing, and the area which is the distribution which is going to infinity. This clearly shows that, first of all, that the time inflation is well defined, and then we can make a computation about that. We're not solving the full problem, the landscape and everything, but these numbers are inputs for the fundamental theory, and I think they're kind of big inputs. Because you, after doing this, many new things open up, and requests open up. For example, one thing I just want to mention is that this volume here, you can relate to the De Sitter, to the entropy of the De Sitter space at the end of inflation. And this is like, in the special term, is e to the De Sitter entropy over 2. The De Sitter entropy over 2 is the time scale in black hole paradox when the first bit was coming out. So people can begin, this is an input for deep quantum gravity people who, the full theory of quantum gravity should match this number. Maybe the Xerox paradox is associated with that. So many questions I can address. And also, for example, we're beginning to study the critical exponent of this transition. I mean, it is just opens new questions. So, what is next? Of course, the inflation should continue. I think we're making progress, and we have to understand it. We have to see if it makes sense, both the time inflation and the problem of the constant. I think on the more early universe side, generic prediction of inflation and the development of these alternatives should continue. I think I made the general prediction for single field inflation, but the effect of theory on multi-field is not finished yet and is in progress. One thing that needs to be done now is the fact that the next generation experiment reach FNL over the free. Now it's clear that so far I've talked just about the inflationary background, but there are nonlinearities from gravity and plasma physics which will reach FNL of order 1, clearly. But 1 is normal less than 3, and these are just estimates. So we need to compute them, because that will be detected from Planck. Maybe and we have to check if they obscure or not the signal from inflation. For example, one calculation I've been studying, and they also have information anyway, on for example, on the SW. SW effect should be detected 6 sigma, for example. In Planck. So, for example, I computed the nonlinearities, the non-Gaussian generated by nonlinearities in the hydrogen recombination during the recombination epoch, because the recombination is quite a complicated epoch, happens out of equilibrium. The electron goes to the 2s, 2p state of the hydrogen, but then it's very hard to go to the 1s. Other photophotons to Laman alpha emission. And this was done by people in 1968, and we generalized to the perturbed universe and computed the perturbation, the triple function induced. 40 years after. I think this give a size of what we are changing. Now, cosmology is really changing. It's going, I think, for the non-Gaussianity. And we have to do that. For example, this calculation gives a FNL order 4 detectable by Planck. So I will conclude. Sorry, also, CMB experiment, I mean, the experiments are also keep going. I'll talk about non-Gaussianities. CMB with each FNL, Planck with each FNL 3. The flip galaxies, some have been already applied, some techniques in galaxies reach FNL 20. But next generation can reach FNL of order 1. These are forecasts. This is applied to data, so it's true, 24. But this is maybe it's biased. But these are forecasts, very promising. Of course, the 20 centimeter, if it will work, will probably really slow down inflation, can as the power. What is true is that in a few years, FNL bigger than 1 will be either ruled out, which will be a confirmation of slow down inflation, because it will mean that of all the models of inflation, it will be very similar to slow down. Sort of confirmation, of course, it's better to have a detection. But if you detect, this means that you rule out single field inflation, if you detect non-Gaussianities, but you will find such an untrivial signal in the sky that you are learning a lot. You're learning much more, and I think you get much more confidence on the theory. This is for non-Gaussianities, of course, progress is going on in all field of cosmology as being usual. So let me conclude. I apologize for having gone over time. So cosmology is a data-driven subject, one of the few which are data-driven. And it's showing with some confidence that this interface, there is a this interface in our present and maybe even one in our past. These are, if it's true, these are huge theoretical implications, not only because they show something about the standard model, but because they might be connected to the solution of the cosmological constant, the landscape of this theory and the Italian inflation. These three very hard problems might find a common solution altogether. This forces us to make progress, and I think we have to make progress in understanding better inflation, to get really sure if inflation is there. And here I think I showed the development of effective Lagrangian to see all what is possible and to really know what is being constrained by experiments. And I concentrated on the non-Gaussianities, which I showed that they teach us about the interaction of the Lagrangian through a huge amount of information, and I show how we analyze the data and give actually the results, the optimal results that will become the analysis of WMAP. This led us to also explore the alternatives, and now we have a working bouncing cosmology. And also this led us to a unique testable model with W less than minus one for the current acceleration units. Coming to the acceleration of the units, to our present, I think I work mostly on the part, strange enough, which is the most past of our universe, which is eternal inflation, which might be connected to the solution of our present problems. And I think I show that we can make progress in eternal inflation, and I give a sharp and quantitative characterization of it. Thanks. Sorry for
yes, so is it possible to combine the things that you could measure omega and therefore say that the inflation that we see in our past did not lead to eternal inflation? It was not part of eternal inflation?
By omega, I mean the total energy of the universe.
No. Omega. The omega, which was your parameter to determine whether or not eternal inflation.
Unfortunately not, because this omega is the region where the potential is very flat. But it could be that there is a change of slope towards the end of inflation. you can get.
That's what
you see. So. And in fact, the region where it's even more complicated, because if you are able to see that. When you get inside with that, those perturbations are at delta rho under 1. So the universe becomes very curved. And so doing CMB in order 1 curved universe is very hard. So, yeah, it would be very, yeah, okay.
So your picture was just with one field?
Yes, the effective field.
Right. Yes. So if you have more than one field, you're going to get these infinite reheating surfaces. But they may be different.
So you're talking about the inflation or about
So the left surface and the right may be different.
Yes, and there are the main walls, maybe not the inflation.
So do you get any insight on how to and measure on those surfaces?
For the measure, I think it's very complicated because what we are able to compute. I think here, the philosophy, I think I want to clarify, was really to do any calculation. And before addressing the full problem, because I mean it's a complementary approach to what many people have done, both valuable. But I think this one, from what we're able to compute, is a redistribution of the volume when it is finite, not in the realization which are infinite. So what we can compute is the ratio of the volumes when they are finite. I don't know if this is really what we want to compute for the measure problem, but you can set up the problem, the bacteria model of two vacua. I'm just deciding if to do it or not. There are some questions we want to do. The problem is that not everything is solvable. We can set up the problem. This famous differential equation that was this ball on the potential to which the problem is mapped is not the most trivial differential equation in the day. It's a mechanical problem, so it's rather simple, but you know about the inflation. So somewhere there is some complication. And it's better than the full picture. It's much better. We can do progress, but now, making this the thing would be making the differential equation or a partial differential equation, having two more vacuum. So, just now we're really at the level of technical, very detailed technical part. So, yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Any other questions?
Okay. Yes. Let me see if I understand. So, in certain models, you have this ring, this number that comes out that tells you what was the some value number that if you're above that,
You are in nonlinear inflation and nonlinear inflation is omega.
No, you had a sort of constant V, is that what? So maybe told you the threshold.
Sorry, what are you talking about? Inflation or
the inflation, yeah. Oh. So in your graph, you had this threshold, which if you were above it, it would go to zero.
Ah, the V epsilon.
Yeah, V epsilon. Yeah.
Yes, yes, this one.
So yeah. Basically, in frame of constant 5 services, if I fix my gauge, then I can calculate V epsilon as a number. Is that right?
The epsilon is this number here, is the initial volume times e to the 1 over how far you are inside, how much you are inside the time inflation.
Okay.
And it's not really a local quantity, it's a function of the parameters of the Lagrange, it's a function of the slope of the potential, it's not a local, it's this number here, I don't know.
Yeah, so let's say, for example, I start some inflation, so I set an initial condition, then for that particular model, I will know what will be V epsilon. Right?
Yes, yes. And then this means that you start inflation and the probability distribution has the following form. And you get a cap on the probability distribution at this level when it begins to go to F. Mm-hmm. And this number you can plug in. It's proportional to how much volume you start with, and it also is inversely proportional to how much you're inside the Taylor inflation regime.
Okay, let's thank
Thank you.